Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I'm also the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies, and I have a wonderful guest today. I'm so excited that we're finally getting the chance to sit down on the podcast, the Just Thinking podcast, and visit with Carla Burkholder. I met Carla several years ago through the Learning Council. I'm a big fan of the work of that organization. Had no idea that several years later we'd be sitting down together on a podcast. So I'm not going to say much more about Carla. She has such a rich and wonderful background and experience. I'm going to let her share a little bit about herself. So Carla, tell us a little bit about who you are and a little bit about what you've done as an ed tech leader.
Absolutely. So thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for having me. I started out as a classroom teacher. I started in Plano ISD near Dallas in 1984. So it's been a long time. I've seen a lot of changes, but I was a business ed teacher. So I taught typing of all things. But quickly, after 2 years, got involved in technology. The district was had a partnership with IBM and were putting in networked labs. And they agreed to take an elementary teacher and a secondary teacher and train them up to come back to the district to then in turn train teachers. So I got to be that secondary teacher. So that's been the focus of my career for all these many, many years. Back in the day, we didn't have internet. We had a coax cable. We didn't have fiber. The computers were giant and we had floppy disks. So it's been a lot of change. But, you know, we saw a lot of promise in what technology could do for kids. So it's been very exciting. I've been an instructional technology specialist, an instructional technology coordinator and director. And then finally, I retired as a CTO a year ago. So I've been involved with all of it, all sides of it.
Well, I'm 1 year ahead of you. I moved to Dallas from Boston in 1983 to teach at Dallas ISD. And I met a woman at that school who is a graduate of Plano Senior High School. So you probably had her sisters in class.
Where I taught was Plano Senior High School.
My word, that's just crazy. But so we have a similar tenure in the business, although I did not have the background in technology that you have had. And Plano at that time, big, right?
That's where everybody wanted to come. Everybody wanted to come see what we were doing.
Yes. And plus, you had the big football championship team as well that helped to bring a lot of interest and funds into the school district and all of that. So, yeah, you were in a very special place. And to be the only secondary teacher in the whole district that was selected.
It was quite an honor. And, really changed the course of my career.
So we touched base a little bit before, but just talking about technology and one of the things you touched on during your illustrious career as someone in the education technology arena, just how critical technology is now more than ever for the students that we're serving. Would you address that a little bit further, Carla?
Yes. I know there's a push right now. There's a push from parent groups, there's a push from some school districts, some at the state level to get technology out of the classrooms, that the kids have too much screen time, banning cell phones, that sort of thing. There's a lot of things to go with that. One of the things I think about is we've let the genie out of the bottle. It's going to be a really hard thing to put it back. You really do that. But I think we're looking at it the wrong way. Technology is something we all use every day, and we need to be sure that we're teaching kids the skills that they need to use it appropriately and responsibly. Taking it out of the classroom is not going to be the answer to that. I have a good friend, and I don't know if you know her, Kevin. Her name is Dr. Suzanne Newell. She's actually the chief academic strategist for GTS. She says, this is a quote that I got off of her LinkedIn. She said, "I now believe digital literacy should arguably be the fifth core content area taught in schools. If we don't do that well, the other four core content areas, math, science, social studies, and language arts are compromised. And I think that I just thought that was so powerful, her to just put that out there. And I have to say, I really agree with that. It's a life skill, and we need to be intentional about helping our kids grow those skills and understand and use it appropriately.
Yeah, I really love that, because in essence, you're looking at an empowerment of the learner by focusing on helping them to become responsible and purposeful and appropriate in their use. Because how many tools are out there that could, if used inappropriately or used irresponsibly, could be dangerous or harmful, right? We could say that of almost any tool or resource that's out there. A fork. I mean, almost anything we use, right? So teaching to use this tool, this incredibly valuable tool that has become increasingly valuable through the years, and is doing so at an exponentially more rapid rate than ever. So when they do leave school and go into the workforce, they are going to be using technology in almost every field of work. So I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, there is not a profession that doesn't use technology in some way. And I am concerned that, you know, we don't always have the right approach to that, to teaching them. Putting them in front of a computer all day long, I call it a babysitter. Some people call it, no, it's online curriculum, it's online learning. That to me, that's not appropriate use. We need to teach them when is appropriate use. We need to be teaching them to create instead of consume. And I know we hear this all the time, right? But we've got to teach them to create. We've got to teach them to be able to discern what's real and what's not real. And that's information literacy. And we've been talking about that for a very, very, very long time. And we've been really good at it in some places, but generally across the board, we haven't done such a great job of it. I think we can do better. We have technology application standards. But it's one of those things, Kevin, if it's not measured, doesn't get done.
I really love that create versus consume, because as I think about this shift to AI, and we'll talk a little bit more about AI in a moment, that was one of my personal reservations or concerns, was does that lead to more just focus on consumption of the information as opposed to the creation? And then you talked about the idea of discerning what is real. So what you're touching on is the importance of teaching critical and creative thinking to our students. So you've elevated that. You haven't suppressed it or depressed it or moved it down. You're elevating the importance of critical thinking. So I'd like you to speak a little bit more to that, because, you know, that's an area that I believe as we go forward with our next generations of learners going into the workforce and being our future, that critical thinking, problem solving, more important than it ever was in our history.
And creativity.
Creativity. Thank you.
And that's a hard thing to teach. But, you know, I'm not going to say now, but in the past, when I was more familiar with TEKS, you know, every core content area called for critical thinking. And they also called for some kind of media skill, right? And we know how important the four C's are. And yet, we get so concerned about content. And it's really not about content. It's about concepts. It's about concepts. And get really, really good at teaching concepts. Well, let's use the tools that can help kids develop those skills, right? And the thing is, it's hard work, Kevin. It's hard work up front. It's hard work for the grownups. Yeah, but it's worth it in the end when we put in that hard work. And really, it's about the learning experience. So what kind of learning experience are we designing for students to allow them not only to learn the content, but think critically, solve problems, and use technology in that process? It all works together.
You know, as you're saying that, Carla, I'm thinking about the question that we so often would ask young people, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? And it was just a few years ago that someone reframed that for me and said, what's a problem you want to solve? And how do you want to go about it? So now everything that I do learning-wise is attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
This whole idea of a problem that I want to solve. So the science, the math, the history, the language, everything that I'm doing is centered around that piece. So the learning, therefore, is much more purposeful, much more intentional, and much more impactful. So I love this. And I love the content first concept. And it's funny because as a parent, you know, kids are grown. Daughter taught for 8 years and she made the decision to try something different. I think may come back. But when she was in high school, I was hit so hard by a teacher in ninth grade that said, I've got to cover this content. I am obligated to do it. And if I don't cover it, I do her and every other student a great disservice. And the part that worried me was, I know there was probably some level of pressure on the teacher to adhere to a certain curriculum map, guideline, whatever timeline. I'm sure there was some of that. I'm sure it was tied to the assessment and that sort of thing. I get all of that as a former principal and teacher. I get all of it. What I don't get is just because you're teaching the content does not mean the students are learning what you're teaching. And if they're not learning it, I don't care how much you're adhering to the timeline. It doesn't matter because they're not learning it, any of it, or hardly any of it. So how do we find that balance? And how can technology help as opposed to a teacher standing in front of a classroom and, you know, lecturing and having that be a more, student-centered.
Student-centered, yeah. Needs to be student-centered. And that's something, boy, I can tell you, way back in the 90s, I did a presentation and it was NECC before it was ISTE, before it was the ISTE conference, right? It's NECC. And we did a presentation on student-centered classrooms. Imagine that back in the 90s. But you know what? We're just not quite there consistently yet. And yet we know that on the teacher evaluation spectrum, and it's leaving me what it's called.
The T-test or the...
T-test. Hello. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That if you want to get to the top distinguished, you have to be student-centered. You have to make available the technology tools that's going to help kids solve the problems that they need to solve. It's all of those things. So we know that's the goal, that even the state valued that, and yet some of the things the state does is contradictory to that.
Sure. Yeah. And I know this happens to varying degrees in all states across the nation, probably throughout the world. But, you know, one thought that I have about that is something that's come up in these conversations on the podcast, just thinking, is this whole idea of so much of what we do in our classrooms and in our schools is driven by assessment. And so what I hear at the end of the day is until and if assessment changes, so many of these practices won't, and to some extent can't, because it is so driven by the end game, which is the assessment. Do you have any thoughts about that, Carla?
Oh, you may be sorry you asked me about that. So my staff, when I retired, would tell you that my least favorite word was testing. That was my least favorite word, because we do way too much of that. And I fail to see and believe that anyone is ever going to leave school and ever have to take a bubble in objective test, right? Never had to do that, except to get some other kind of certification. Have I ever had to do that? But you're right. It drives everything. And so many times I've heard teachers say, you know, I really want to do this. I really want to use this with my kids. I really want to, you know, I want to do Genius Hour. I want to do those things, but I have to wait. I have to wait until May.
After the test.
Testing's over. You can't build those skills. Kids can't develop those skills in May. That's not very long. So the challenge is helping, especially helping leaders see how it is possible to be successful in an assessment and change the pedagogy in the classroom and to make it student-centered. That was a big challenge, was helping the leaders see. Because if leaders don't buy into it, if they don't know and believe and value that, then the teachers don't have permission, right?
Sure. And not only that, but, you know, if they're just looking at the data, what the results say, on the surface level, they don't know any of the context. They don't know the story around the data. Really, the data's not all that meaningful either. And I know it, you know, I shared, having been a Title I principal, my goal was, I knew some of the things that my students would need in order to be successful in life. Part of that, I wanted them to do well on the test. I wanted them to be effective readers and writers and mathematicians and all their problem solvers. I wanted them to have all of that. But I also wanted to instill this sense of love and joy in learning, coming to school. So I wanted to paint murals in the school, and I wanted to start a student-run bank, and I wanted to start an Odyssey of the Mind group because we didn't have one. I wanted to do those kinds of things. And that's what we did, and put a parent center in so parents feel comfortable coming into the school. This is their home. They can bring small kids. They don't have to feel nervous or anxious about bringing small kids to school. This is your home. You come, and this is your place. Now, I will say, those weren't always the things that were valued by everyone in leadership that I served or worked with, you know. And so I served the students, but, you know, you feel torn sometimes as the principal, because I would literally be asked, what should you be doing right now? Well, I guess I should be focused on this assessment things. My scores aren't at the top of the heap. Yes, sir. And that's what, you know, I would comply when I had to, but it's not all that easy. So I do think having these types of conversations, making sure that leaders are better informed, but also the community's better informed, so they know what to hold the leaders accountable for. I often have said in some communities, the Planos, the Kellers, where I am and so forth, in many instances, if the kid's not getting in trouble and they're getting good grades,
everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy. Yeah. Right? No, we're happy. Kids are doing well. They're coming home. They're happy. They got good grades. You know, all this is great. But is that all there is to school?
Well, and I remember when I was in Northwest ISD, and we did a lot of innovative things in Northwest ISD. And I remember we were doing we had already did a one-to-one, and we were about to go through our first refresh. And we brought in teachers and administrators and parents and students to do a visioning day. You know, let's talk about what learning should look like in the classroom before we ever talked about devices. And it just really, really floored me that when you got students talking about changing the way things were in the classroom, or, you know, doing project-based learning, or even the idea of no grades, they could not see beyond, no, my grade point average, no, they couldn't, because we've ingrained them in that. And I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's a video called Losing Ourselves, and it interviews with students, and it's very long. I used to show this to my Baylor students. It's like 40 minutes, and I would stop about 20 minutes in and say, okay, do y'all want to keep going? And they would go, oh, yes. But it's interviews with pre-K through high school, and it's about, you know, ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? And, you know, little kids can say, oh, yeah, yeah, but you start moving up, and they're like, what? What do you mean? Yeah, what? I want to graduate. I want to go to college. They can't think beyond that. It's fascinating. So I would encourage folks to to look that video up and watch at least some of it. It's it'll break your heart, but you know, it'll help you understand what we're doing to our kids.
What's it called again?
Losing Ourselves.
So let's take a deeper dive into this whole idea of tech integration and the establishment of digital literacy, and just whose responsibility is that in our schools and in our districts?
It's everyone's responsibility. It's everyone's responsibility. I taught 1 year of seventh grade English, Kevin. That was an interesting year. But one of the things we did way back in 2000 was we started looking at, you know, project-based learning. And so we did this whole unit on the Oregon Trail, and you were on the Oregon Trail, and you had to plan, and you know, what are supplies you were going to need, and how long was it going to take you to get all these things. And so you had to do math in the English classroom. And that this is a math class. Well, yeah, but when you leave math class, you don't automatically not know how to add and subtract and multiply and divide, right? Well, this is a math. So that's what it makes me think of. When we think about technology, well, this isn't technology class. Well, that means that you don't take this into your class, or you have this with you all the time, and you do stuff on it, or you have a computer or whatever. It's everyone's responsibility. Technology keeps school running, right? The grownups use it all the time. And kids do too, just in different ways. So we have to, you know, we hear this a lot. It's a great catchphrase. You got to meet kids where they are. Well, where they are is right here. And so if we don't, so we have to build opportunities, and I'm not saying to use the phone, got to build opportunities into the learning to use the tools that they are using and tools they need to learn to use, all those things. That's all part of it. It's like a book. It's like if you said, well, this isn't the library. Well, you still have to read, right? You still have to read. You still have to know how to use the technology.
Well, and with regards to that, you know, I'm a huge believer in professional learning. So I think that to make the assumption that every teacher naturally knows how to do that in a very effective manner might not be a fair, you know, assumption to make. So, in your experience, what are some of the things that you did to make sure that teachers had a better understanding of, I don't know, more effective, impactful ways to integrate technology everywhere?
So several things. So in one district, there was a requirement that teachers complete a technology integration academy within 3 years of being hired. That's one of the best models I've ever seen, right? But I will tell you, my doctoral research was on that very thing, because they came in, they sat down for 3 days, sit and get blah, 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 leave and go on, right? So wasn't really making its way to the classroom. Well, my research said, no, it's not. So we revamped that whole thing, and we made it a year-long academy, and it was like a college course, or maybe it was a semester. I don't remember, but it was, you know, you did some things, you went back to the classroom, put it into practice, that sort of thing. So that was more effective. At another district, I had a similar thing. It was called Leaders of Innovative Teaching, and it was an after-school, is on your own time, kind of a face-to-face. Then it became a hybrid kind of experience, to help teachers, you know, start to gain the confidence in using those tools. And then they would have support on campus to help them when they wanted to do that in the classroom. I think one of the most important things in every district I've been in where we've had them is instructional technology support for people. Especially in one-to-one districts. You're right, because teachers don't inherently understand or know how to do that. That's not something, that's a whole nother conversation, Kevin. Why don't this in college, right? So they don't necessarily have those skills, but when you have folks there to support them, to come in, model for them, be there with them when they try to, you know, teach the lesson and for support, then they start to gain that confidence, and they'll start doing it on their own. So I think that's really important to have that support.
Well, it kind of brings me back to what you were talking about earlier, this whole idea of technology being the fifth core, right? So if in fact it is the fifth core and everybody subscribes to that belief, then we wouldn't have this issue that we're talking about right now, right? So that goes all the way back to, you know, how students are being taught pre-K through 12, and then in college, and especially in our teacher pre-service and so forth, that this becomes part of the whole thing. You wouldn't think about leaving out one of the other cores of literacy, or you couldn't even imagine it. So why would you, in a world that is just so rich with technology, would we not? It's almost irresponsible to not, right?
It is. It is irresponsible. And we do our kids a disservice when we don't. You know, one of the things I would tell my Baylor students, there are some things you cannot say in this classroom. You cannot say technology is the future. No, it's not. It's here. It has been for a very long time. And you can't say 21st century skills, because we're two decades in. That's no. It is a skill. It is a skill that kids need.
Well, that actually takes us to the third point that we really wanted to address during the course of this particular episode, and that's this whole idea of generative AI. So this is one that not everybody's wrapping their arms around and giving it a big warm bear hug. This is something that, you know, has created some level of controversy about the pluses, the minuses, whether we should have it, whether we shouldn't. Let's talk a little bit about generative AI and what that should look like in our schools.
So it's a huge disruption, right? So we think about when the internet came along, huge disruption. Oh, kids, that's going to be the end of education. Kids don't have to learn anything. Or, the calculator. Remember the calculator? It's going to ruin math skills. Oh my God, it's going to be horrible. So this is that same sort of thing. You know, people, this is what we do. We storm and then we norm, right? We just, and then it's like, okay, now let's think about this. So it's not going away. And kids are using it anyway. We like it or not, they're using it. I know that there's some kind of bill in the legislature right now. I don't know the number. I don't know exactly the language. Something about not having AI in school. Well, it's kind of like, again, the genie's out of the bottle. There's too many things that already use AI. It's not necessarily generative AI, but they already use AI. And by the way, state, you used AI to grade exams, grade essays, last testing, last year or the year before. Anyway, so no, it's not, you can't just say you're going to take it out. So we have to teach kids. We have to give them the tools. We have to make sure they're safe and secure. We have to teach them that how these things work, that everything you put into them is training them to do more and more and more, right? Be careful about what you put into it. And you have to give them opportunities to use it, because then if it's okay to use it, then they're not going to try to sneak around behind your back. And it's a whole thesis, a whole research paper that's generated by AI and think you don't know what it is, right? The other thing we also have to understand is those AI checkers that, you know, so many schools are going, oh, well, we've got to get this and we'll turn it in or whatever. They do, that'll work. They don't. They might one of these days, but right now they don't work. So our best strategy is to give kids opportunities in the classroom to use it and say, hey, by the way, you have to use AI for your outline, or you have to use AI for your first draft. And then we're going to take that. We're going to not use AI anymore. And I'm going to, because the teacher will know, they'll know their kids' writing styles, right? They will know that if they're coming back and they're writing something that's like a college professor wrote it, which it probably wouldn't be from AI, but you know what I mean? They'll know. Or if they have AI write it and they don't pay attention to all the bulleted list that it'll give you, because it's very big on bullets, change that. The teacher's going to know, right? So we have to give them opportunities to use it. We have to show them when it's a good idea to use it and when it's not a great idea. And even with cheating, cheating's been around since the dawn of time. They're going to cheat. Kids cheat. That's what they do. But what you lose from that is you lose the learning for yourself. So somewhere along the way, it's going to bite you. Somewhere along the way, you're not going to have learned what you need to learn to be successful.
Well, to piggyback on that, I use AI almost every day, generative AI.
Me too.
And I don't feel like it's doing my work for me because I'm refining. I'm feeding new and different information to get a different output. So the amount of critical thinking that is involved in the process of using generative AI is as high or in some instances higher than before using it.
Yes, absolutely. And
I didn't anticipate that to be the outcome. I was one of those sort of skeptical people about it for learners until I started using it myself. And I really think the people that are making the decisions around this, if they really looked at how they use it in their lives and in their learning, they might better understand how this could be impacting students in a classroom setting. And to your point earlier about teachers know the students' writing, I've been through years, Thinky Maps, right from the beginning and so forth, of training. And one of the things that I learned through our writing training was that voice comes from word choice and word order. So the way I order my words in a sentence, in a paragraph, my particular word choices, even during the course of this podcast, it's very clear to me, I have certain words that I use more frequently than others because it's Kevin's voice. So people know that this is Kevin because there's some patterns that start to evolve. But I kind of like the idea that generative AI could take me outside of that box a little bit and teach me some new and different ways to express myself so that I can then start to incorporate those into my day-to-day speaking and writing and communication. So any thoughts on that, Carla?
Well, I think what we have to do first for teachers is get them to use it, right? Show them, you know, one example I use is like, you know, it's Friday afternoon, and there's an angry parent who's just emailed you, what a terrible, horrible teacher you are, and you didn't do this, and my kid said blah, 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 and you're just, and you know if you answer it right then, it's going to be bad, and you're going to have to delete it, and you're going to have to wait until Monday, and then you're going to spend the whole weekend worrying about it, right? And I can respond to that nasty email very professionally, can do it for you. All you have to do then is go through, read it, go, oh, I might change this word. And send it off. Then you're free for your weekend, right? And think about personalized learning. Think about another example I use is teaching math, teaching fractions to fourth graders. Okay, what? You know, I'm not a math person, Kevin. Not my. You know, I could always do what they told me how to do, but I never really learned anything. That kind of stuff. But if they when we were learning fractions, if they had said, okay, Carly, you like Barbie. So I'm going to give your math problems are all about Barbie. And you like sports. So maybe your problem's going to be about baseball. Hey, I'll do that. You can take all those, whatever that concept is, and say, give me five problems that's based on Barbie, and it'll do it. And we could have never done that before. So it's pretty miraculous, some of the things it can do for us to save time and still make a great learning experience for kids.
Well, Carla, I have loved this conversation. It's been too long because I've been wanting to have this conversation with you for a long time. So I'm thrilled that we've had the time to do this. We're coming to the end of our time. So out of respect for our listeners and our viewers, is there anything else about which you're just thinking that I did not give you the opportunity to address during this episode?
Yes. You know, it's really all about, we've already said it's all about the learning experience for kids. It's about innovation. Technology is about innovation. And innovation, not just with technology, but innovation in the classroom, innovation in pedagogy, innovation in how we do school. And I love this quote. I have to read it because I want to get it right. For George Kuros, this says, a culture of innovation for students cannot be created through a culture of compliance for adults. It's really about the kids. We have to do what's right for kids and not what's easy for us.
That's something to just think about, right?
I think about it a lot.
Well, Carla, thank you so much for your gift of time on today's episode of Just Thinking, and I look forward to our next conversation soon.